Hello, and welcome to How Do You Feel, the show that is dedicated to your health and wellness and is sponsored by the Peoria City County Health Department. I'm your host, Lorraine King, and today I'm visiting with James Agbar Bryson, who is founder and CEO of the Annie Malone Center for Development. Welcome, Agbar.
Thank you so much for having me here.
Well, Agbar is here to talk about some of the issues behind the unprecedented rash of shootings in the Pure community and what fosters this violent behavior and what can we do to help bring about healthier lifestyles. How can we reach the hearts and minds of these young men who are engaged in this self-handicapping and violent behavior? Agbar, the past 24 to 48 hours have really broken my heart, and I guess it's been long, it started before then. But first of all, can you give us your overall thoughts about your take on what's happening in our streets, and particularly on the South Side and the East Bluff?
Yes, probably about a year ago, I did the Black Genocide in the Black Community, and it was really over here at Pastor Chris's church. And we had a good gathering, but that whole event was designed to make our community aware that we are in a war. We're in a war of the minds, the bodies, and the souls, particularly of our African-American men. We're in a situation whereas we are active participants in Black genocide in the Black community. But this has been going on quite some time. 10 years ago or so, I did the conference on African-American males. And one of the things that we talked about once again was the war. We're participating in a war against each other. So what we're seeing here are remnants of the war, but it's been going on, Lorraine, quite some time.
Now, Agbar, when you say we are participating in a war, I know that you are primarily referring to the individuals that are engaged in the violence, but are you also including a broader segment of the community as well?
Well, it's not just Peoria, Lorraine. It's across the country.
Okay.
If you look at what's going on across the country, I mean, crime is up, but particularly crime, leading cause of death in African-American community or African-American males. But this is all across the country that we're seeing this. COVID has just made things worse. Since COVID, we've seen these rash of shootings, mass shootings, but Peoria particularly, that's home. So it's really alarming to see this happening here.
Now, if you were to begin to dissect and analyze and try to put put some humanity to this, what do you think is happening in the minds of these individuals that are engaged in this behavior?
Well, first of all, the majority of the individuals who are participating in this behavior are what we would call disengaged youth and young adults. There are approximately 2 million disengaged individuals. Defined being disengaged as individuals who are not in school, individuals who are not working, individuals who feel that they just don't have a place in the community. So they create their own community. But unfortunately, these behaviors really accumulate into the crime, poverty, and incarceration. So the idea is getting these individuals re-engaged into the community, understanding, letting them understand that they have a future, they have a purpose. But there are over 2 million disengaged young men across the country that are participating in this behavior.
Now, excuse me, when you say that they create their own community, but do you have an idea what is it they're trying to accomplish by this behavior? What's the end game?
Well, the end game is really, it's unconscious. The end game is death, incarceration. But for the individuals who are participating in this destructive and self-destructive behavior, it's fun. It is fun. I mean, we're establishing our own territories. We're establishing our own boundaries. And unfortunately, it's neighbor against neighbor. These are children and individuals who have grown up together. But because of the disengagement, because of the emptiness, because of the lack of hope, these individuals have participated and into this undeclared war on themselves.
Now, to go back, you know, you said they're trying to create their own community, mm-hmm. and they're doing this because they're disengaged. What do you think has happened prior to that that brought them to this particular stage? Like, well, why aren't they in school? Why don't they have jobs?
Well,
and what are their families doing?
Well, unfortunately, your parents can be your best friends or your worst enemies. I've noticed way back with the crack attacks, what I called it. Crack came into our communities. Parents and children started engaging in these behaviors that crackheads do. And then these mothers, fathers had crack babies. And then crack babies had babies. And so now we're seeing generations, in my opinion, of these type of behaviors. But it's all self-destructive behavior. There's no hope. Music has been a great contributor to this behavior. I go into school and I say, man, what kind of music do you like? Man, you don't need nothing. Write down the lyrics. And we're being programmed. What's on television? And disappointingly, Oprah, the Black Network, everything is dysfunctional. What is it? Black hip hop homicides, death, destruction, going along with the music, going along with alcohol, going along with drugs, going on with no vision or hope. It is a cycle of self destruction. And unfortunately, it has taken out generations. And sadly, the population is getting younger and younger and younger.
Now, we know for a fact that the U.S. imprisons more people than any other country. So, obviously, prison and jail are not deterrents to this kind of behavior. And then you say that death could be an ultimate goal of some of the individuals. So, when does this take hold in them? Is this from the time that they're born, interacting with their peers or their families, or the time that they're disengaged in their communities? Like, when does this take hold of them, you know, to precipitate this kind of behavior?
Unfortunately, at birth. So,
because they're crack babies, a lot of them are.
Well, some could be, but remnants. Remnants of crack parents, grandparents, remnants of that. But it's the behaviors. So when you, a lot of times you can look at the parents and understand why the child behaves the way that they behave. A lot of this, really, in many cases, the children are the victims of the parents. It takes a special skill to raise productive children. And when you have parents that don't value education, when you have parents that like to party just as much as you, when you have parents that really may not want you around, I've talked to students, and I said, man, where are you living at? They live in wherever they can. I mean, a lot of this population is homeless. And so they living with each other, or what they call living on the block. And they don't come from an environment that we would call where you can self-actualize. Come from an environment where really self-actualization is, how can I make a living other than work? You know, how can I have enhance my self-esteem and get power and control is through criminal activities and things. Having a gun makes me very, very powerful. Very powerful. Having a nice car, very, very powerful. But in reality, it is really a sense of hopelessness. It's a sense of isolation, and all those things lead to mental health and behavioral health issues.
Now, I know that we want to get to some strategies for remedying this situation, but you mentioned guns. How are these guns so readily available to these individuals?
That's a great question. I see all across the country. We're living in a country now where we have, the country says that we have Christian values and things, so we'll have a Bible in one hand and AR-15 in the other hand. We have politicians who think that everyone should have a gun. Everyone should, as long as their guns aren't in my community and these things are not going, are not happening in my community. So you're really kind of wiping out a race back to the genocide component. But unfortunately, the participants who are participating in these activities are unconscious that they are perpetrating a war against themselves. They have becoming the warriors of black genocide in the black community.
That's a very, very, very sad commentary, Akbar. And for those listeners who may have just joined us, I want you to know that you're listening to 106.3 on your FM dial, WPNV. And the show you're listening to is How Do You Feel? A show that's dedicated to your health and wellness and is sponsored by the Peoria City County Health Department. Today, I'm speaking with Akbar Bryson, who is the founder and CEO of the Annie Malone Center for Development. And he's discussing some of the traits of the individuals that are perpetrating violence in our community. And now, Akbar, I'd like to get to what can we do as a community to start to address some of this behavior. You've already mentioned that it's something that's happening nationwide and that our youth are being programmed, you know, by the music they listen to, by the media, by politicians, by the lack of parenting. So where do we start?
Well, I think my personal opinion is that back in the day, we had churches, and the church was really a main staple and a foundation for African Americans. I know I had to go to church, a vacation Bible school. My grandmother made me go to church. I didn't understand all that stuff. However, as I've grown, it gave me a foundation and a philosophy to live by. Now, I really don't see churches as having the impact that they used to have in our community. And so I see a lot of this has to do with what I would call a spiritual void. This is more like a spiritual war. When you don't have a spiritual foundation, it is easy. Satan comes to rob, kill, and destroy. And a lot of that comes from confusion. And Satan really ain't after you, Lorraine. It's after your children's children's children. And it's the spiritual law that's called inequity. Your behaviors and things, curses, are passed to the next generation, as well as blessings. So I don't think that, I mean, it's going to really be a tremendous challenge to deal with this epidemic of violence and hopelessness without having what I would call spiritual warriors who are able to provide some kind of peace, hope, and vision to the souls of the individuals who are participating in this. So it's bigger than what we're seeing. I look at it as a spiritual component that only can really be healed through spiritual healing.
Now, we do know that the community engages on a regular basis in prayer vigils. As a matter of fact, there's going to be one tomorrow at noon at Martin Luther King Park. So we pray. But as a practical matter, what are some of the first steps that we can take? And also, I'd like you also to touch on some of the workshops you've done in the past about the role that people that provide services like beauty care and barber care, that they provide, you know, as a listening voice for these individuals.
Well, I think one of the ways to really help deter some of this violence is those that have been through it. Terry Burnside model, you have to have not just spiritual leaders, but you have to have street people on the street who you call trusted community members. Mm-hmm. And that's the foundation for the Annie Malone Mental Health Initiative. You know, man, I done been to prison, man. I done tell you what prison's like. I done been strung out, you know, and tell you what that's like. It ain't like what y'all doing. Mm-hmm. I been shot. I done shot somebody, see what it's like. So being able to find individuals who aren't afraid to engage the individuals, who have a relationship with the individuals, mm-hmm. but also are able to provide guidance and mentorship to these individuals to show that. Lorraine, I was working with a program. Young man was working on his GED. I said, man, what are you going to do after you get your GED? He said, I'm going to be in the trenches. I said, the trenches? I said, man, you don't need a GED to go in the trenches. You can go in the trenches right now. You don't have to have a high school diploma going to trenches. But let me ask you.
But what did he mean by the trenches?
Well, the trenches really is what we're seeing now. A trench is a deep hole of hopelessness. A trench is a place where it's hard to get out. It's darkness. You participate in activities that lead to death and destruction. That's a trench. And what I told him, I said, man, let me tell you something. Trenches are easy to get in, but they're hard to get out. So the young man, I guess, finally got his GED. But then I saw him a year later, 2 years later, just walking up and down the street, manual. Not employed, not going to school, not getting training, but it's being involved into these activities. That's the trenches. It's a lifestyle.
But Akbar, but he took the initiative to get his GED. So how does that compute?
I don't know if he really got his GED. He was in a program to attempt to get his GED.
Okay.
But I'm going to tell you, Lorraine, without vision, people perish. And so this young man had no vision other than what he's seeing, even with the A. I didn't got a GED. So you didn't have to be in the trenches. But your vision is where you see yourself, and that's where you saw yourself. Like I said, you don't need a GED to get in the trenches. Get your GED, get your high school diploma, and then create a life. You know, create a life. Stop tripping and start living. But that has to be taught. You have to have mentorship. You have to have people who you can relate to. Cultural competency is really important in dealing with individuals. I just come from all mental health professionals, predominantly all white females, know very little cultural competency. Biases in mental health is a big barrier to us. Not just those that need to receive the mental health, but those who also provide mental health aren't comfortable dealing with individuals that really need it. They do not know how to provide the service. That's why we need a whole different mental health approach. Community mental health educators who are able to be trained in mental health symptoms, who are able to are seen as trusted community people that can go in and you can talk to, and then engage these individuals and then become mental health referrals. Unfortunately, we got two mental health providers. The biggest one is who, Lorraine, you think?
The biggest mental health provider?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we know that the hospitals have mm-hmm. programs for
mm-hmm.
people.
Mm-hmm.
But we know also that the resources that used to exist for mental health have been diminished greatly over the past decades.
So the population that we're dealing with, the biggest mental health provider is the jail. So I got to go to jail. You know, I'm crazy. I got to go to jail, get some mental health. And that's limited. Because otherwise you got barriers. I don't have no insurance. I got a 30-day wait. The healthcare provider that I'm seeing is going to have all these credentials. You know what they've done to us in the past with our history. I can't trust him. And then individuals providing that, well, I'm really not real comfortable with providing the service because I can't really relate biases. So someone like me, low income, person of color, I gotta go to jail to get some services. So, and the other thing is that there's a huge shortage of mental health providers. But there's another resource that who are African-American, low-income mental health providers, and those are our barbers, and those are our cosmetologists. Those are people who are in the health and beauty component. I mean, they provide touch. Poro College, Annie Malone, Poro College. Poro means spiritual, emotional, and physical health. And it is these individuals, I mean, a touch is magic, but it's these individuals who are really providing the best that they can mental health services. They're untrained. So another initiative is to, what I do is train barbers, cosmetologists, people who are in the beauty and health care, and train them on, you know, what does anxiety look like? What does depression look like? How does it impact in the individuals? How do you engage individuals? Get conversations with them. And then reach a point whereas once you get them, make a referral. You know, Wraparound Center, NAMI, those organizations, those things help. Now, it's not going to get everybody, but it will get a lot of people that need it. But it's a whole different approach to mental health.
Mm-hmm. Now, Akbar, you mentioned that the spiritual
void
was, there is a spiritual void. Now, we know in Peoria, just like in other communities across the nation, there are churches all over this community. So there is potential there for churches to take a more active role. Instead of setting up churches and just praying and singing and collecting, you said we are in a war, so we need to change our strategy.
Yes.
We need to become not just warriors by praying. We need to become active in the community. So is it a possibility for us to begin to mobilize all these little churches on every corner to get trained and go out into the community and make contact with these people? Because we know that probably there are people in the churches that know somebody in their neighborhood, if we could go into the neighborhoods. I mean, if we're in a war, then let's change our strategy and fight it differently, and not just with guns.
That was my conversation today, is to change the whole approach to mental health. The churches are a valuable source, but you got to be a warrior. I mean, you got to be out there at Laramie Street. You got to have men, or particularly men, out there, not just with crosses, but people who have been saved from that lifestyle, mm-hmm. to not be afraid to go out and recruit these individuals into the church. Our community, every time there's a shooting and someone witnesses it or a victim of it, it's like dropping a petal into a cup of water. It just ripples out. We are saturated with trauma, and we're not being treated for it. Our community has an epidemic of post-traumatic stress, undiagnosed and untreated. And what we're seeing is the residue of these behaviors with the shootings. It's called behavioral health. It's dysfunctional, it's self-destructive, but until we're able to get some kind of treatment for this post-traumatic stress component, we're going to continue in these cycles. People are hurting. People don't know where to go. People are doing the best that they can. We really don't need prisons. We have created our own prisons and don't feel, first of all, comfortable where we're living. If you don't have safety, then you can never self-actualize. You have to feel safe in your community.
It's the basic.
It is the basic of Maslow hierarchy of needs. Safety, a place to live. And once you get individuals to feel whole, healthy, then they will not participate in the self-destructive behaviors. But there is a lack of commitment. resources from the mental health communities to really provide funds and to make these programs sustainable. I mean, if you're gonna fight, I mean, Rita has a tremendous job. But another tool that I think is missing is I do implicit bias training. But having the police and the community come together, there's a whole workshop on building police mm-hmm. and community trust. And that's when a policeman ain't no policeman. Policeman is Joe. And I'm not Gangster Tim. My name is Bill. But we're sitting down at a table and we're talking about the issues and challenges that you're facing as a policeman, that I'm facing as a citizen. So much of implicit bias now is virtual. Well, we can do implicit bias. We got a program that can go on a computer. It's not community engagement.
But you know, our police chief has began to take some basic steps in that vein that you're talking about, you know, with the walk-in tour and with the police advisory committee, which I was a member of for a long time. And so the residential officers, I think, can play a bigger role. And they already are widely accepted and highly praised by in the communities in which they live. And so the epidemic that you're talking about is not one that we're going to solve today. But I do appreciate the fact that you brought up that there are potential areas of help for those who don't have the help. So could you just like give us a wrap up of first steps that we can start, you know, with in addition to just the praying vigils?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, some of the strategies you mm-hmm. mean?
Yes.
Well, I mean,
for those who are listening.
Well, we talked about, I mean, anyone who's interested in becoming a community mental health educator can contact me. It's only a 3-hour training. It's a basic training. Mm-hmm. At the end of that training, you will get a 3-hour credit course, CEUs. The LEAP program and staff has gone through that. Some other programs have gone through that. But it is a start into dealing with some of the, first of all, understanding mental mm-hmm. health and the causes and the trauma. The schools, I think the schools really need to do more in the sense of having individuals come in and talk about enhancing mental health and resilience in the school. Our students and our teenagers are at the highest rate of mental illness that's ever been recorded, as far as we know. But they're not being addressed. Mm-hmm. We need to take a holistic, non-traditional approach. Being politically correct in a school environment and the population we're dealing with is politically incorrect because we don't understand that language. You got to be able to just talk. Mm-hmm. Talk, connect, and show individuals that you care about them. But more importantly as well is instilling hope instead of hopelessness. All of this goes into workforce development. I mean, we have programs. You can go college free. Matter of fact, I'm going to pay you to go to college. You can go into programs and careers and make money. We have to work on overcoming the self-handicapping mindset as well as poverty mindset. The trenches is poverty. It's hopelessness. And to understand self-sufficiency and wholeness and the spiritual foundation mm-hmm. are very important in helping us to overcome this epidemic. You know, Peoria, worst place in the country for African Americans to live. Well, that's kind of changed. African Americans are making Peoria one of the worst places mm-hmm. to live in the sense of this senseless war and behavior that we're seeing. And unfortunately, it's like a cancer. It spreads. But the good thing is, and I think we should concentrate also, are those that's on the peripheral. Those who can go either way. We need to concentrate on those who are doing well mm-hmm. and concentrate on those who could end up being recruited into this war. Unfortunately, a lot of individuals who have decided to participate in this war are going to be the casualties of the war and continue to spread this post-traumatic stress syndrome throughout our community.
Akbar, you provided us with some very sobering thoughts, and unfortunately, because of time, we're going to have to leave it there, and I'm sure it's not the last conversation that we'll have on this topic, but I encourage people to take what you said to heart and take action. Maybe churches can be like the medical facilities throughout the city. They're on every corner, so maybe they can go out into the community, and I hope they take advantage of your training. And for our listening audience, can you just give us the information on how to contact you and get enrolled in that training?
Yes, if you're interested in becoming a community mental health educator, you can contact me at 309-208-8778. Forgot my own number.
It's 309-208-8778.
Correct.
And they can contact you, and
yes,
and you can set that up, and hopefully you'll yes get enough to have an ongoing slew yes of those kind of workshops.
Yes.
I want to thank you so much for being with us today. The show you've been listening to is How Do You Feel? The show dedicated to your health and wellness and is sponsored by the Peoria City County Health Department. This show airs at 11 a.m. on Saturday, repeats at 7:30 p.m. on Sunday, and if you missed those broadcasts, you may go to the WPNV podcast page, wpnv.org. Look for podcast, and the one you want to select is How Do You Feel, and you can receive updated information. I've been your host, Doreen King, and I want to thank Akbar Bryson again for sharing with us and giving us his sobering thoughts. To the radio audience, thank you so much for listening, and I hope you will join us again next week.
Now is always the right time with the song.